Hello, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I am your host, Lisa Anderson, and I am contemplating getting a gun. The reason being, I'll throw this out to my comrades here who are at the table. Last night, I actually went to bed before 10:30, which is the earliest I've gone to bed probably in, 12 years. It's concerning, yeah. And there are some bags under the eyes that are going to need certain products to alleviate that problem. However, so last night I'm sleeping, but then at 10:30, but then at 11:30, a picture fell off my wall in my living room. And I am not even joking. Like, I just about had an aneurysm.
I am so glad. How long is that picture? I'm glad to hear this. Lisa, how long has that picture been hanging on your wall?
Well, let's see. It's actually fallen a couple other times. Oh. In total, about 3 years.
Because who's on the picture? Who's in the picture?
It's a black and white photograph that I took when I was in Prince Edward Island.
See, because I have this thing where I'll say to Steve, oh, I think that shelf is going to fall. It's looking loose. I can't sit on the couch under that shelf because it might fall on my head. And he'll say, it's been hanging there for 7 years. It's not just going to all of a sudden fall. But see, now this sort of confirms my theory
it could just fall one day.
Yeah, I mean, this is not good. Okay, so I'm like lying in bed last night. It's like 11:30. I didn't realize that it was my picture that fell. And fortunately, after about 2 minutes, I had the presence of mind to realize, you know what, maybe a picture fell. But in those 2 minutes, I'm like, someone just broke into my house, mm-hmm. and I'm just laying here in bed with like a slipper next to me. I mean, I don't have like a bat.
So
I don't have
no
anything
security
going
system.
On. So you're no, like... I do have a security system.
Oh.
It so didn't
that,
work.
But you know, that's like certain if they come in windows and yeah. doors. And I'm like, I don't even know how this person could have gotten in or
well,
whatever.
Well, didn't you have a run-in with law a few weeks ago?
That was a whole other story. And
disturbing.
I was completely yeah. misunderstood.
Aren't we all?
So yeah,
you were laying
just...
in bed like Mrs. Bennet thinking, Mr. Bennet, we're going to be murdered yeah. in our beds.
Totally. I was just like freaking out because I'm like, honestly, like what am I going to do? I mean, I live alone and I'm like, am I just going to jump out of bed and go and like confront this person? I mean,
get a shotgun with no ammo.
Okay.
And then when
that's
you
what
I
it,
have.
Here's
Ted.
My deal.
That's
yeah.
enough
like,
to scare people
why
out
I
of
even
your house.
Live where I live and why I even live alone is very questionable because, first of all, I've already had a break-in in my house. Now, I was not there, so praise the Lord. Then I had a drunk driver plow into my yard in the middle of the night and wake me up, and I went and chased after him because I'm like, I'm going to go find out what he looks like and report him. So I'm just like, you know, I mean, I honestly, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to get up and just walk into my living room, and if someone's there, I'm just going to whatever. Quote scripture at him or, you know, grab, I don't know, something that I have elsewhere in my house. I don't even know what I'm going to do.
Have you thought about getting a German Shepherd?
Yes.
No, because I can't do dog hair. I don't like just pets kind of freak me out. I didn't grow up with pets, so I don't mm-hmm. have dog
but,
issues.
But pets are less freaky than scary intruders.
I saw this 2020 special or something like that where a burglar said that the dogs are not a good deterrent because they'll come up and lick your hand. They really – it depends on what dog you have. Okay. It's just that most dogs you can calm down pretty easily is what they were saying.
A little bit of steak in your pocket? A little mutton?
Something.
Well, something – yeah. And I mean I'm kind of like, okay, so I had – you know, my last incident prompted me to get the alarm system, which is like way hugely expensive.
How much do you
and
pay for that a month? It's like $1,000 to install or something?
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I'm hooked up to ADT and supposedly whenever someone breaks in – I have to, in order to indicate, you know, well, if I'm the one there and it goes off, I have to go and give my code.
So you've had false alarms.
So you're in the background going, help me, 849-211.
Exactly. So I had one false alarm one time in the middle of the night, which I was convinced I was going to die because this thing's like 127 decibels. So it goes off and I completely freaked out and I walk over into my kitchen where the intercom is and ADT speaks in and they're like, give me your code. So I give the code and then they say, do you know, has someone broken in? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm talking to you. They could possibly be in my home. Let me go and check and confront them and then get back to you on that. What in the world is that about? Like, why am I paying all this money for this stupid system? So I'm just like, you know what? Maybe I need to get a gun.
So when you heard the noise and the alarm did not go off, you felt someone may have tunneled in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know how they could have gotten in, but with the incidents that have occurred in my home, I was sure that there was a way.
What about ghosts? Could be a ghost.
It could be a ghost.
Brushed up against the picture?
It could be a ghost. It could be a family member. It could be a cat. I don't know.
Get a gun. Just learn how to use it.
Get a husband.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Ted, what kind of protection do you have in your home?
Fire extinguisher.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I'll spray them and then I don't
hit
them.
Where do you keep it?
Oh, I spray them and then hit them.
You keep it under your bed?
All right. You blind them?
I've got them in various places throughout the house.
Oh, secret, hidden. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs a fire extinguisher.
I have a nail claw by my bed.
Well, I don't know if...
It's true.
A nail claw.
I can do some serious damage.
They're violent. What happened to turn the other cheek?
That's only married people that need fire extinguishers because single people just eat out all the time. All right, so around the table today, before we get into today's topic, I want to introduce who we have in the studio with us. We have Steve Waters, who's the director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family.
That's right.
He has been at Focus for quite a while now, and many of you know him from Boundless fame and from other arenas. So he will be weighing in with his unique perspective. So Mott Brown, many of you know him as well. In fact, all the folks here in this room, with the exception
Everybody
of myself,
me.
You know from Boundless. I'm just the stealth participant. Mott is part of that team as well and kind of oversees that area, including Boundless. So.
Hello.
Ted Slater is the editor of Boundless, does a lot of the technical as well as contributing content and just maintaining the craziness of all that goes on there with articles and blogging. And
there's a bit of craziness. Well, it's my pleasure to be here, Lisa.
All right. And apparently he's from somewhere, either in Oklahoma or Texas. Was that like
or
an
Chick-fil-A.
Accent? What are we doing? Oh, yeah, exactly. He's past work at Chick-fil-A. And finally, Candace Waters, Steve's
Hi, Lisa.
Wife. Hello, Candace. And many of you know her as the founding editor of Boundless. She currently contributes, and she's the author of the brand new book, Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen, which just released.
So good to be here.
Very exciting. So,
thanks.
And I am your host, Lisa Anderson. I don't have any credentials other than the fact that I am single and am interested in the topics that we discuss here. So we're going to go ahead and launch into our topic, our inaugural topic for the roundtable, which I think is fantastic because it's a little bit divisive. So our plan here is to alienate a good sector of our audience, get rid of you in the first week, and then we'll just have to start building it from the ground up again, I guess.
Divide and conquer.
Right. Right, exactly. Cut out the riffraff. So the first question I'll say, for those of you that are listening, you individuals, I need you to go ahead and raise your hand if, in fact, you are part of a church singles group. Raise
we
your
see
hand
those
right
hands.
Where you are.
We see those mm-hmm. hands.
A lot of you. So here's the question that I have for the panel. I too am part of a church singles group. Have been for a while. I go back and forth as to whether or not that's a valuable thing. I'm currently in leadership of my group, though, so I guess I have to speak highly of it. Woo, props to my group. Here's the question. When you're talking about church singles groups, the whole dating paradigm comes up. And I want to know, people within these groups who know one another, interact with one another, whatever, is it mandatory, and we'll just call it, you know, mandatory and or an obligation, let's say, for the men in said singles group to actually ask the women out for any reason, and I'm not talking about, you know, is she hot or not or whatever. Is it just mandatory for them to ask these women out by virtue of the fact that they are within their acquaintance? And then in turn, is it mandatory or should it be expected of these women to reciprocate by accepting those date invitations? What do we think?
Well, I think the overlying cloud in all of this, I've heard so many singles group leaders pride themselves on saying our group is not a meat market, in saying that they are here to focus on God, and so we discourage people from seeing this as a meat market. And my sense of that is that the desire people have to intimately pair up with other people is pretty stubborn. And that even when they hear that goal, that lofty goal,
if it is a lofty goal,
it doesn't go away as much as it, I think the fact that they're told this isn't a meat market, it just creates new weirdness. It manifests itself differently. Mm-hmm. So people don't repress that.
Is there weirdness in your group, Lisa?
There's some weirdness. I would say, yeah, I mean, I would say that for the most part, most of the people in my group have known one another for over 5 years, and there's not a whole lot of dating going on, because I think maybe on both sides, people have just been summarily dismissed for whatever reason.
See, I would want to ask a different question. If there is not dating going on in a Christian singles group within a church body, Why not? What better place for like-minded believers to come together and find a suitable mate? I think it's troubling if there's not any.
I mean, I can see a leader's desire to keep it from being just a meat market.
I think meat market's
that puts such a negative cast on it.
Absolutely.
I think when they say, I don't want people to come here and just see each other through hookup eyes, that's absolutely commendable. But when you say, therefore, we're going to ban it, and we're going to say this isn't a place that's conducive for meeting a Christian spouse.
Right, that's crazy. I mean, I've always said the reason you should join a singles group is so you can leave the singles group. You want to go there so you can get married and leave there.
Anytime you ban something, you just create black markets and other ways of people channeling towards what they want. So that's why I'm saying I think that's created a lot of the weirdness, that maybe they're not using terms like dating, but they're having pseudo-relationships, intimate conversations without the cover of dating. And I think they're hurting people more than helping them by saying dating's off limits in this group.
Well, and it should be a topic that comes up quite a bit for conversation. The leaders in the group ideally would be throwing out the marriage topic and then helping to mentor these singles into a healthy understanding of what Christian marriage is all about.
Let me throw out two things. I don't like the word, what did you use, mandate or requirement or obligation? No, I don't like that word. I don't think there should be an obligation among either men or women to pursue anybody. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, didn't Jesus say something about a prophet not being accepted in his own hometown?
Seriously,
there's an attitude behind that, that if there's a girl in your singles group, well, you know, maybe she's not the mysterious, exciting woman that you
In the days of Laura Ingalls Wilder, she went and found the best guy she could find in her village. And that was it. That's what she had to choose from. And she did the best she could. And that worked
for centuries. That was then.
I would say, why not start with
the
singles group?
It sure did. It's a different world, though.
Yeah, but
the obligation the guy has is if he's burning with passion, he needs to pursue marriage.
Hey, that sounds like 1 Corinthians 7.
Exactly. So that's the obligation he has.
Well, there is so much sexual immorality, every man should have his own wife. Every woman should have her own husband. I mean, this is something we should be pursuing. When you realize that 77% of Christian men are not virgins when they get married, there is a sex problem in our Christian culture.
And why not start with a singles group?
I agree.
Why not have someone come alongside you, a mentor, a married couple, and just take a fresh look at the women in your singles group, because it's possible that the men in the singles group, like Steve was saying, aren't encouraged to marry, and if they do want to marry, if they desire companionship, and if they're burning with passion, I think it would serve them well, not an obligation, but it would serve them well to take a look at those women with a second pair of eyes.
Yeah. So well, Ted, also, good point. It's not an obligation, but why not look there? Why
well,
not start
it also
there?
Goes back to what we so often hear when we're discouraged from having a lot of intimate pairings and getting into private places where you're tempted to go beyond sexual, appropriate boundaries, that you need group settings to be able to see someone's character, to be able to hang out in a healthy way.
Right, definitely.
But we need the ability within that group to allow people to discover each other and to have a developing relationship without the sense of somebody clamping down and say, that's not appropriate, that's not appropriate.
Right, especially if they're worried that it might mess up the group dynamic. I mean, I've heard of singles groups where they say, oh, we have such a great group, why would you want to pair off? If you two pair off, it's going to mess everything up. Well, the whole point, though, really, during the 20s is to pair off.
Well, it kind of goes back to the book Urban Tribes, where you have some groups that are so strong that they really resent pairing off because it changes the group dynamics. And you even have people where they cannibalize the relationship because they're afraid that pairing off is going to throw everything off. And so they would prefer to just be the group.
All right, let's say that the guys do get this vision. They do take another look at the women in their singles group. Do the women have an obligation to respond and say yes to any guy that asks them out?
I think they should consider any good offer. Anybody that asks them out, they should certainly, they should at a minimum ask themselves, if I'm thinking no, why? Mm-hmm. If I'm thinking I don't want to go out with this guy, why not? And make sure that they're legitimate reasons and not just that he's too short. Or
now, Steve mentioned something earlier on that I think factors in, and that's the fallacy of the soulmate.
Yeah.
That when you meet the one, you'll feel ecstatic,
know.
A lot of emotions. And instead, perhaps we should be looking for a good friend who we can develop a meaningful relationship with.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not entirely sure what we're saying here at this point. It sounds like we're talking out of both sides of our mouth, because Ted is saying they're not under an obligation. And then Mott's saying, oh, you need to look at all these objective criteria of character and whatnot. Well, the fact is that isn't happening. I mean, I think, first of all, most people are in singles groups, you know, because that's their demographic. They don't really feel comfortable anywhere else, whatever. And it's still I think the prevailing notion is I'm going to hang out in this singles group. And if I happen to find someone, then that's super. And then I'm going to pursue that person. There is no intentionality going on in singles groups. I think we're assuming something that's not really
happening. What is the standard answer you get when you ask a guy who's in his mid-30s why he isn't married? I just haven't found the right one yet. Well, look, I think he's coming about it from a wrong perspective.
It's a consumer perspective.
It's a consumer perspective. Look, there are a lot of right ones. There are a lot of women who would make a good wife. There are a lot of women that you can have chemistry with that you are attracted to. Choose one. That's what I would say. Choose one. There is no right one. There are a lot of right ones.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks everyone for your comments. While you are writing your lists and making sure that you do choose one, next up we're going to be talking to Jeff Kaler about his new CD, Okay, the music of which has been featured throughout this podcast, so you'll be hearing more about that. But first, let's talk about what's on Boundless this week. Two things I want to talk about. First of all, Candace Waters has written a new book, Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen. An excerpt is available on Boundless this week. And really, you're going to want to check this out, because this is a book for single women, unlike any other book for single women. It's going to tell you what you can do to live a life that indicates that you are actually planning to marry and you're not sitting around waiting for something elusive to happen, waiting for the stars to align. It's good stuff. You know, guys, you should be reading it too. So go ahead and check that out on Boundless. At the same time, while you're there, read the article that's actually coming out today, which is Why I'm a Big Fan of Hell. If you're not a big fan of hell, you should be, apparently. And the author is going to talk about why, really, the fact that God came up with the idea of hell itself. And, or, you know, maybe I should say, H-E double hockey sticks? I don't know if I have to sanitize that. Anyway, why God came up with the idea itself. And, you know, why, in fact, we should be a fan of hell and what that even means. So, and I would just suggest, too, that make sure you're not going there and you'll even be a bigger fan of it. So go to Boundless, www.boundless.org, and check out these articles and many others that are available this week.
It feels just like I'm waiting in line behind the guy who likes to talk to the cashier. I wish he'd leave. I wish he'd go home. Be somewhere else. Something in the way.
All right, in today's Culture Corner, I have with me Jeff Kaler, who normally sits behind the board for us, but is a well-rounded individual, so can actually share in other spheres of life as well, and we're so grateful for that. So today, many of you actually probably don't know that Jeff is a musician in his own right. He actually has a CD, which is fantastic. I've listened to it. But he's here with me in the studio today with, again, I must draw attention to the rockin' hair. And I did find out via Facebook last night that he bought some new pants. And I understand he's wearing a pair of those today.
I am. I bought three pairs of new pants.
Just for us? Just to be part of this?
Well, you know, I have a limited supply of pants that I can actually wear to work. And
don't we all?
You know, there are a lot of pitfalls with doing your own laundry. One can be collar
issues.
I just
want to interject that that's because you don't have women enabling you by doing your laundry. So props for
that. Thank you. Well, you can mess up the color, or you can, you know, put something in the dryer that's not supposed to be in the dryer, and you end up with pants that are, you know, an inch too short, or that kind of strangle your gut when you sit down. So these are new pants, and they feel like they did when I tried them on in the fitting room. So I always love new pants.
Excellent. All right. Well, you maybe wore some new pants when you were actually recording your album. I want you to describe, if you can, give me an idea of the album is called Okay, but I would like to find out, obviously, it's a very it's an album that's driven from your own experience. You wrote all of the songs. You know, obviously, vocals and, you know, many of the instruments are yours and your own performance. So give us a one sentence, if you can, summary of the album.
Yeah, the music has been described as acoustic soul, and the CD, Okay, is really about realizing that life can be okay, maybe a long time after, but life can be okay when things don't seem okay.
And why music? How does music express Jeff Kaler?
I am a complete introvert, and I don't like to be in front of a mic. I don't like to be in front of people and talk. But for some reason, I really enjoy telling stories through music, and I like to listen to stories through other people's music. And so I really just have kind of discovered this, and it's a great outlet for me. And I think it's a way that an introvert like me can kind of tell the big picture story, kind of be a part of the larger story that God is writing in everybody's life. Somebody like me can be a part of that story by sharing through art.
What would you say is a song on the album that you're identifying with right now, one that really resonates with where you are?
The last song on the CD is called I Didn't Think I'd See You Here Today. And I wrote that one night eating Taco Bell, watching a Mercy Me DVD. And it was definitely not the situation where you expect to have an encounter with God. But that's really what happened that night. And I feel like the whole, you know, last 6 months have been kind of just an exciting kind of roller coaster whirlwind in terms of just people appreciating the music and feeling like I've kind of connected with folks with this project.
And I think we do need to make a note here that, you know, this isn't just Jeff in his garage, you know, putting something together that those of us on the Boundless team have listened to. The album was actually ranked within the top five albums of 2007 by Christianity Today. It's created quite a stir. I saw some of the reviews. Everything that I saw has been positive. And, of course, like I said, I listened to it myself, and my opinion is probably the most important of anyone out there. So I just want to put in my two cents for that. Obviously, Jeff, I cannot wrap up this interview without asking you. I know you're from Anderson, Indiana, which is just good times all around.
That's where Mound State Park is, by the way.
Excellent. See, and well, I mean, inevitably we'll have a segment on that someday. But you know, I don't think our listeners know what a fan I am of the Gaithers. Bill,
yes.
You know, is my homeboy. And, you know, would you ever consider maybe collaborating with them? I mean, since your, you know, styles maybe aren't too similar, but, you know, what do you think?
You know, it's odd that you bring up the Gaithers. I've actually been inside the Gaither compound.
Oh, my goodness. Praise God. That is, that's like fantastic.
I grew up in...
I have not yet been there. Bill, if you're listening, did you hear that?
I grew up in Anderson, Indiana. And we actually drove to church in Alexandria, Indiana. We went to the same church as the Gaithers did when I was a little kid. So I've been in their facilities, and I've recorded music at their Pine Brook Studios. It used to be Pine Brook Studios. I think it's just Gaither Recording Studios now. So,
all right.
Yeah. I don't know that Bill would remember me, but
we'll maybe see a collaboration in the works. And as we go out here, one other artist you would love to collaborate with in the future, if you just had to pick one.
Andrew Peterson.
Oh, yeah. Love him.
Yeah.
Excellent. Andrew, you heard that. Give us a call. Just email us, editor@boundless.org. We'll hook you up with Jeff. We know that you feel the same way. So anyway, all right. Thanks, Jeff, so much. Again, the album is Okay. You can find it at jeffkaler.com. That is Jeff as in JeffKaylor.com. And Jeff's been providing the bumper music for us throughout this podcast. Let's take another listen before we hear from Steve Waters in this week's segment of The Hungry Years.
The doctor said there's nothing wrong with my head, at least as far as he can tell. Late at night when I'm lying in my bed, sometimes I don't hear so well.
For much of my life, I felt torn between two desires. One desire was to be a person of influence and have my life count for something. My other desire was just to be, well, normal, or at least not be considered an oddball. I was convinced I could never have any influence until I found some way to rise above all the odd traits and circumstances I had inherited. For example, my dad was a rock and roll singer, until my mom prayed him out of it. After playing juke joints all over America and even meeting Elvis Presley, Dad became a pastor. For the rest of our childhood, we could never miss church. We had to spend December 31st praying in the New Year, and we couldn't dance or go swimming with other kids. As I hung around the punch bowl all night while the other kids got wild at the dance, I thought I was a little odd. When I was 7, my dad moved our family to the country and started an experiment in self-sufficiency. Over the next decade or so, we raised our own fruits and vegetables, killed deer for meat, tended an assortment of chickens, pigs, goats, guineas, rabbits, and honeybees. As I walked through chicken poop to collect eggs, while the other kids played Atari and watched cable TV, I thought I was a little odd. When I was 9, I started getting passes to slip out of English class for special meetings. Because my grades were good, the other kids thought maybe I was going to a gifted and talented class. I was actually visiting a speech therapist. For some reason, when I tried to talk, I would occasionally freeze up and stumble over the initial syllable in my words. Stuttering never made it easy to meet new people, or to impress girls, for that matter. As the impediment would grab my tongue and listeners would give me sympathetic looks, I thought I was a little odd. It seemed I grew up with more things to make me feel odd than things that would help me be a person of influence. I had freckles, I was left-handed, I wore the husky-sized tough-skin jeans while my twin brother got to wear the slims. I often wondered what it would be like to just be normal. Even when I tried to reinvent myself in college and blend in there, it still seemed impossible to be anything more than a pudgy, left-handed, stuttering country preacher's kid. Not only did my efforts to be normal seem doomed, I also felt disqualified from ever being a person of influence. Then I made an interesting discovery. Taking a class on leadership in graduate school, I was amazed to find out just how many leaders rose to their positions in spite of, and often because of, the things that made them odd. For his book Entrepreneurial Life, David Silver studied a broad range of innovators to look for common elements. He found that nearly all endured some form of shortcoming as an adolescent. The most common, small size, physical illness, less wealth than their peers, poor educational development, or skin problems. Then consider the oddballs of the Bible. Moses, faltering lips. Ezekiel, ate food cooked over dung. John the Baptist, well, he wore those clothes made of camel hair, ate locusts and wild honey. Apostle Paul was distinguished by what he called a thorn in the flesh. But it was Paul who explained so well how God is able to turn our weaknesses, differences, and failures into tools for his purposes. Writing to the Corinthians, he said, "Brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. He chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are so that no one may boast before him." In other words, my odd background didn't disqualify me from doing important things with my life. In fact, it seemed to qualify me for the group of people God chooses to use. How might God be planning to use the things that make you feel odd?
Feel like a bird tied to a tether. Not quite how it's meant to be. Looking around at all these feathers. But I don't.
Clicking on the Boundless inbox. This question is from Alice, though it could be from me. I have liked this guy for 4 years. I've made myself sick about it, and I'm wondering whether or not I should tell him how I feel. I agree that men should initiate relationships, but I don't want to have doubts in the future saying, what if? I also think that sharing my feelings will help me move on. What should I do?
Alice, you want to share your feelings because I think you're frustrated and you think 4 years is long enough for this guy to get the clue. And you think that you'll move on if you say that you want to move on, but what you really want is to share your feelings and for him to have a come to Jesus moment where he goes, oh, I do love you, Alice. I do love you. I don't really think you think it'll be the move on moment. You want it to be the move into a relationship moment. And that will violate your whole thinking and your whole belief system about letting guys initiate. It sets a really bad precedent.
Now, I can understand her desire for closure, just simply bringing an end to this chapter so she can fantasize about the next guy.
But you know,
because that's healthy.
most guys know when a girl's interested. I think really there should be more guys out there who are the ones trying to get closure, who have been interested in girls and are afraid girls don't know it, who need to be the ones who are taking the risk. The thing that she's getting at is that guys aren't taking the risk, and so she's wondering, should I take the risk? And that's really why we've got so much relational confusion, is because it's like women are the only ones willing to step out a little.
Okay, well, Steve. And really the best thing she could do is just back away, because then if he misses her, he may actually initiate something.
Well, Steve mentions that guys get this clue that a girl's interested, and others might say that women give off signals, you know, even subconsciously. Maybe she's not giving off signals appropriately. What are some signals that she could give off in a way that's
appropriate?
Okay,
I think if she really wants to do something proactive, I would say talk with either her parents about it, or if that's not a possibility, a mentor couple at church, to share with them how she feels, who the young man is, and ask them to help her vet this guy out, find out if there's any potential. Let someone else do that for her, preferably the husband.
Now, what if she found out that he was interested in Dostoevsky? Maybe she should start picking up a book by Dostoevsky and read it and say, hey, I've been reading this book by Dostoevsky.
Yes.
I know I'm slaughtering the pronunciation of his name. But so
no,
it goes.
Bravo, Ted. But what she should not do is say,
that
Joe.
Is weird.
No. When I met Steve, he was reading a book. When I heard what he was reading, I went out that day and bought it so that we would have something to talk
about.
His
name is easier to pronounce.
Something to talk about.
Yeah, something to talk about. Really great strategy. But what she shouldn't do is go up to Joe and say, Joe, I have liked you for 4 years. Is there any chance?
That can crank up the freak-o-meter.
Yeah, I mean, if he was interested, you're in trouble now.
Wow. Okay. All right, that's it. We're going to shut the inbox. Remember, you can send your comments to us about the podcast in general, or your questions to editor@boundless.org. That's editor@boundless.org.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.